You asked about at the end of the 40-day time frame, keeping people involved. I'll tell you a little ulterior motive that we had in that first 40 days for life. Shortly before that hour of prayer, I had met with an advertising executive, and I was in a college town. And one of the things this advertising executive shared with me is he said, if you look in our town at small businesses who don't have a lot of money for advertising but are pretty savvy on this stuff, what they do is they put all their ad dollars into just the first few weeks of the fall semester of school, and that's it for the year. Because they know in a college town, a fourth of the student population is brand new every single year, and at the beginning of the fall semester, all those new people, new faculty, new support staff are there. They know that if they can get those people to go to their business the first time, buy their pizza or get their haircut, whatever, and have a good experience, they'll be able to then keep them coming back for the remainder of their college years. So we watched that, and indeed, that was how the abortion facility in our town was working. At the beginning of the fall semester, they would give out condom packs on campus, they would give talks, they would run ads on television, they would get people engaged in promiscuous behavior and trusting these birth control drugs and devices that would keep them quote-unquote safe without protecting the soul and the heart. And then when those inevitably failed, they would come back to them for an abortion. As we looked at that, we started saying, how can we do something that capitalizes on that same philosophy of a short, intense period to shape, in a sense, buying behaviors? And our thought was we need to do something for a short period of time that reaches people before they start using the services of the abortion facility. So when we went in prayer, that was another reason that the 40-day time frame just seemed divinely inspired, because it was a short period of time. Father Frank Pavone, the National Director of Priests for Life, when he first heard about 40 Days for Life, he said, you know, one of the things that's brilliant about this, not because of anything we came up with, because of this is God's plan. He said, one of the things that's brilliant about this is it's all stuff that people have been doing for years, but it gives it a finite time frame that has a beginning and an end. And we like projects that we can see the end of down the road. And if we just ask people, hey, do you want to come out and stand in front of this abortion facility every week for the next 20 years? That's just too much for most people. So if we give them a short-term project they can pour their energies into and really get excited about, because you have so many more people doing it during that time frame, they see a lot more fruit produced. And then as a result, when you reach the end of the 40 days, then they're more inclined to find their place in the greater pro-life movement. So we've seen people then go to work as volunteers or staff at a place like a First Choice Clinic. We've seen people go into maternity homes. We've seen people run for political office. We've seen people get involved in educating others. We've seen people start in their churches a pro-life organization or effort. It's been amazing to see the fruit that comes from it. So that's one of the things, and as they mentioned here in North Dakota, you've had one of the strongest 40 Days for Life campaigns in the nation, and I think it's because of the humility and the prayerful spirit of the 40 Days for Life team, that they totally trust God and then go where He leads them. But as a result of this, you have an opportunity this fall, for an example, if you can preach to your congregations and get them involved in a short-term project that they can see the end of, they get excited about it, they see the results during that campaign, then those people will be far more likely to want to find their place. And for some of them, it may not be in an ongoing way in prayer outside the abortion facility. For some, it will. Some will be called to be sidewalk counselors, reaching out and offering alternatives. But many people will find different places in the overall pro-life movement to be able to continue on. So that's one of the great blessings of this. It's a short campaign, but then it plants seeds that bear fruit in so many other ways. We've seen towns that the pro-life movement has absolutely exploded following a 40 Days for Life because of that short starting impetus they had at the beginning. There was one campaign that really touched my heart, and that was in Providence, Rhode Island. And in Providence, there's a Planned Parenthood abortion center. And the lady who signed up to do the 40 Days for Life in the fall of 2007 is a lady named Joanne. And Joanne's daughter, Eleanor, agreed to help her with the 40 Days for Life. And Joanne was very excited about the campaign. The first thing she did after signing up was she ran to her pastor and said, "Pastor, I'm so excited. I'm looking forward to our congregation being a part of this." And her pastor heard about it all and said, "Oh, we can't do that. That's a political issue." So Joanne and Eleanor, not knowing any better, ran to the local political people and said, "We've got this great 40 Days for Life campaign. Get everybody involved." And the political people said, "Oh, we can't do that. That's a religious issue." Don't we see that? Everybody tries to pass the buck off to somebody else. Joanne and Eleanor reached out to friends, to family, to anybody and everybody they could, and it just seemed to fall on deaf ears. And literally, for their 40 days, they had just a small handful of people. I think it was less than 40 that were involved in that entire campaign. So for most hours outside of that abortion facility, it was Joanne or Eleanor or the two of them there together in prayer. So when our family went to that 40 Days for Life location, sure enough, it was Joanne and Eleanor outside of this Planned Parenthood. And as we got there and they shared with us some of the experiences they had, the workers would come by and spit on them every morning going into work. They would ridicule them. They'd mock them. People driving by would scream obscenities at them. And they said, you know, we know we're not called to be successful. We're called to be faithful. And they went day after day after day. And I said, well, have you seen any fruit from it? And they said, well, no, not really, but we're supposed to do it, so we're going to keep doing it. So at the end of that 40 Days for Life campaign, they were on my heart because I was just so burdened. I knew they had poured their hearts into this. They had tried so hard to get other people involved, and it just had not worked. And so at the end of that 40 Days for Life, I called Joanne and Eleanor, and I said, how did it end up? And they said, well, it was a great experience for us. We grew spiritually. That's an interesting point. We survey the 40 Days for Life participants. 91.3% of those who participate in 40 Days for Life say they experienced spiritual growth as a result of their participation in the campaign. I personally know that as much as we've seen the world around us changed by this, the greatest change has come in the individual hearts and in our own spiritual journeys, and will probably for any of you who participate this fall. But Joanne and Eleanor said, we grew a lot, but we really never saw any fruit or any evidence that anything we did had any impact other than on ourselves. And I had a tear fill my eye at that moment because I just really ached for these beautiful women that had tried so hard. And I just wanted them to see just a little glimmer that what they had done had made a difference. And it wasn't until a few months later that they emailed me and told me that a local pastor had reached out to them, and he was a Catholic priest. And he said, I wanted to let you know that a young couple has come to me. They're about to give birth to a baby, and they've asked me to baptize him when he's born. And they said, this couple told the pastor that they had gone to that Planned Parenthood abortion facility for an abortion during those 40 days. And when they went, they walked past Joanne and Eleanor going in the door, never talked to them, went inside, started filling out their paperwork. And while they were sitting in that abortion center, it suddenly hit them. Those two ladies outside are praying for us right now. And their tears started to splatter down onto the paperwork they were filling out, and they just said, we can't do this. They took their little clipboard back and said, we're not going to go through with it, and they left. They never told Joanne, they never told Eleanor, and they just took off. And the pastor said, I wanted you to know that that baby is about to be born. They've named him Robert. He is beautiful, he's perfect, made in God's image and likeness, and attached to this email is the ultrasound, the 4D ultrasound picture of little baby Robert. And as you look at this little boy, recognize he would not be alive today were it not for your faithfulness. And so Joanne and Eleanor got to see that little glimpse of God at work through their faithfulness. There are many people who may not ever see that, and that's not what we're called to see the results. We're just called to do the work, and then God will take care of the outcome, as Dr. White so eloquently spoke to us earlier this morning. But I just really encourage each of you, as Colleen said, this is a critical time in history, and I really believe that when the history books are written about this era, our children, our grandchildren, the children of the members of our congregations are going to come back, and they're going to ask all of us, what were you doing at that critical moment? 2009 was a turning point year. It says here in the history books, that was the beginning of the end of abortion. That was when people were praying and fasting and taking to the streets and empowering pro-life ministries that helped those in need. It was a time when there was healing outreaches that were reaching those who'd been wounded by abortion. It was a time when people were not afraid to speak the truth, even if it meant there were consequences for it. And they're going to ask you and me what we were doing at that moment in history. And today we get to decide which path we're going to choose, which answer we're going to give them. Are we going to give them the answer about how busy we were and how many other things we had going, or are we going to be able to tell our children, I did everything I could possibly do because I knew that in my role I was called to speak up for those who could not speak for themselves. And when we tell them that, and I believe you would not be here today if that was not what answer you would be giving to future generations, our children and grandchildren are going to just swell up with pride, and you're going to see tears in their eyes, and they're going to know they have good blood running through their veins. And they're going to say, well, everybody else in Fargo and North Dakota and throughout America was just busy doing their own thing. You were doing the right thing. And that's the opportunity we have today. The decisions we make right here in this upper room can impact generations to come, can change our nation, can change our world, and can build the kingdom of God right here on earth.